You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. It's time to speak to one of our favorites, one of your favorites, Paul Moyer. You hear him on the Seahawks broadcast, pregame show, halftime, postgame show. Does a great job there and does a great job with us every week. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Before we get into the Seahawks, we want to get into some of these rule proposals that were going to be up for a vote and then pulled off the table. First, we had the Sky Judge. That was going to be up for a vote, and they said, oh, you know, we don't have our ducks in a row. Let's table that. And then there was the 4th and 15 proposal that I think the Eagles originally came up with that Dave and I specifically didn't like until we heard, at least until I heard that it was going to be an option. You could still do an onside kick. It wasn't replacing the onside kick. You were going to have a choice between the two, so that made it much more palatable for me. How did you feel about those rules, and are you bummed that they didn't even get to a vote?
No, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I don't mind seeing some change along the way, but I also, why do I got to reward the team that's from behind? Yeah, so now I'm going to give them two options. You know, they're losing for a reason. You know, I think I heard Dave Wyman yesterday say, well, you know, go back to the old onside kick rule, you know, where at least you had an opportunity that was more successful where you could, you know, stack or overload one side. You know, you can certainly have a better opportunity there. You know, I think that the challenge with that 4th and 15 one is, you know, you start doing, you know, algorithms or data on it, you know, there may be a point where someone says, you know what, maybe we've got plays in, or, you know, we increase that 4th and 15 number to, we can convert 40% of the time on that. Well, you start doing some of that math, you go, okay, if I kick it away, it's 100% of the time I'm giving the ball back to the other team. What if every time I went for it on 4th and 15 after I scored, you know, where I had a chance to 40% of the time to get the ball back? So, I mean, you could change the odds in football really quickly. So I just think there's some things they need to play out a little bit more. And I don't know, is it broken? I mean, do we need to fix the – you're behind. We got to fix you to have a more opportunity to win from when you come behind. I don't know. It's really the only sport that does it. You know, basketball doesn't say, okay, you're behind, you can have the basketball back. You know, but there's no other sport. It's really the only one that gives you that opportunity.
Yeah, I like the way you put it that way. I mean, you're losing for a reason, so why reward them? And then, you know, and then same thing with the draft, you know, you get rewarded for being terrible. So, but let me ask you this. We had Dean Blandino on, Paul. I really enjoyed talking to him. The officials themselves, you know, and I'm going to do a little story time tomorrow about some of the interaction that I had with those guys. And, you know, and Blandino basically agreed that, yeah, we're given a lot. And so they get a lot put on them as far as, you know, having to enforce rules, and some of them maybe they don't even want to or they think are unrealistic, but the NFL wants them to. But I always looked at those guys as being, they were there to help us, you know, and you probably had a lot of interaction being back there with safety and playing that position. What were some of the, what was your impression of the officials during the time that you played?
Well, I know the rule book was about half the size, Dave. I mean, you know, it's gotten to be, you know, the size of the amount of words as a Bible. I mean, how you can memorize all that is crazy. And I just think, again, that it's the what if. You know, we just keep piling on more and more and more rules. And I do. I think, you know, 30 years ago, they did. They used to talk to us. They said, hey, you know, here's what I saw. You know, make sure you're not doing that. You know, there wasn't this, you know, hard rule along the way. I did. I felt like they were trying to just help the game move along. You know, they really felt if I wasn't seen, if I wasn't throwing a lot of flags, that was probably good for the game. And I don't think it's necessarily their personalities have changed. I just think, you know, the scrutiny of TV, the amount of rules. I mean, I don't know how you can be that perfect. And they are so good. I mean, there are times when I look at it and I go, oh, there's no way. That was out of bounds, or that was a fumble, and wait till they do the replay on that. They're going to overturn it. And these guys are really good. So, you know, again, I just think that that rule book has gotten crazy. I like having replay. I just wish they would speed it up, make it a little more common sense, move on quickly. You know, no one wants to lose a game by a blown call.
Paul, do you like overtime the way it is, where the team that wins the toss, if they score a touchdown, the game's over?
No, not necessarily. I like the college way. I just think it's exciting. It gives both teams a chance. I think it's better now than what it was before, where, you know, first one to score. I don't know if that was fair, because, you know, you lose the coin toss. I think now, if you go down, score a touchdown and win, I think that's pretty fair. It's hard to do. To go and all the way down and score a touchdown, so you deserve it. But I've always liked it. I think the college one is exciting. I think most people like it. I know there's, you know, they don't want to extend too many plays. And one thing about the college one is, my goodness, you know, you can add an extra 30, 40 plays to a game, because it just keeps going on and on. But I think it makes for a lot of excitement.
So if you could change one rule, they just said, whatever you want, Paul Moyer, you go ahead and change that rule, would that be it? What would it be?
Be no pass interference.
Just none? You could just tackle the receiver?
Defensive back. Former defensive back.
I wish they would clean up the pass interference call a little bit. I think there's the absolute obvious, right? You know, there's holding, you grab a guy, I get it. But when you got two guys playing downfield for a football, to me, unless it's a blatant, a guy pulls a guy down, let them fight for it. You know, I hate that when there's an underthrown football and a receiver is rewarded because it's underthrown, the DB didn't see it, and all of a sudden, you know, he runs into the wide receiver, is now trying to come back on a poorly thrown football. I'm like, why are we rewarding them for that? So there's just, I hate the subjectiveness to it. I think it's really a difficult play, and the reason why it's so difficult is it's so subjective. It's, to me, if you pull the guy down, you pull his arm down, it's blatant interference. I think that's an easy one to call. But you got two guys battling for a football, let them play it out. And that would be the only thing. I wish they would have guys who are probably a little bit younger and have actually played defensive back and wide receiver as well, so they really understand what's going on with that. But that's the only one I really get frustrated with. I think everything else I can live with.
Hey, Paul, as far as the Seahawks going into the season right now as they are, you know, there's been speculation that, and this Clowney thing pops up again, and now we're hearing that he possibly turned down a possibility to play in Cleveland, and reportedly it was a multi-year deal, and it just continues to be confusing, because I know you've been a big fan of his as well, but, you know, you just hear more and more that, look, it's the sack total. It's that really is what gets you the $18 to $20 million deal, and that's, I think, as much of it as, and I know we've beaten this horse to death, but any new thoughts on Clowney and where you think he'll end up, or where, how much money you think he'll end up getting?
You know, so much of it is, you know, speculation, right? When no one knows the real deal, and you know, Cleveland could have offered that to him, you know, before the draft. I know the Seahawks offered, you know, before the draft. And then, you know, all of a sudden you start losing salary cap money, and there's just not enough to go around. Look, I think for him, the longer the offseason goes, the more film I've watched on him. And I've said this, I think he's a fantastic football player. I just don't think he's a great top line, oh my goodness, where is he, pass rusher. You know, he's limited in that speed rush and size. So, you know, he's a bit of a tweener. Great football player, though. You know, both sides, you know, of rushing and playing the run. So what's the price to that? If he truly turned down $17 million a year and it was a multi-year deal, I don't know what he's looking for. I mean, if it was just, I don't want to play for Cleveland, would he come back and play for the Seahawks for $8 million? Because he likes Seattle. So it's a head scratcher. And again, we're all speculating along the way. Maybe something pops for him. I think he's a good guy and a good football player. I hate that he's losing out on probably what he's valued at or was valued at. But if it works for Seahawks and we pick him up, because you know the one thing we've always talked about the off season. What do the Seahawks got? You know, they've got a lot. I mean, you start looking at the amount of players the Seahawks have added in free agency, and I truly believe in re-signing some of their top players as well as the draft. I mean, what did we lose? I mean, we lost Jermaine Ifedi, George Fant, Quentin Jefferson, Al Woods. We released Tedrick Thompson, Ed Dixon, Fluker, and Justin Britt. Did we lose anything? I think Quentin Jefferson I would have liked to have had back. You know, George Fant, yeah, I would have liked to be. He wasn't even a starter. Jermaine Ifedi, everybody, you know, went nuts on Twitter about him. You know, Al Woods, I think, was probably one of the best consistent players we lost. You know, so we've added a lot. And if we could sneak in just another guy, you know, I don't know who that's going to be, if it's Clowney or someone else. Man, I think we got a really good football team in front of us.
Yeah, it sure seems, and I know Carlos Hyde wasn't, they didn't sign him to a big deal. I think it's around $3 million. He has a chance of making $4 million, but more and more, even these minor deals add up after a while and lead you to believe that they're moving on from Clowney. But what about the addition of Hyde, Paul?
Well, I think it's good. We talked about, you know, should they have gotten Freeman from Atlanta? I liked him just because I thought he brought a different aspect coming out of the backfield. But if you want a true guy runner who can run between the tackles, who's you guys remember? I mean, God, when he was playing in his prime, and that wasn't that long ago. I mean, he was one of the best running backs in the league. I mean, he was tough, and he's hard nosed guy. He had over 1,000 yards last year for a team that you know probably wasn't known for running the football in Houston. So look, it's a great at the very least, you know, a lifeline if you know Carson and Penny don't come back healthy. And now you've got three running backs that I don't think you're worried about injuries now. I mean, they're loaded, and I think it's their commitment again to the run. And I think we're going to be a pretty big, tough offensive line with depth. So I'm excited to see what we get. You know, this is, at the very least, he's going to push everybody because he's a pro. I mean, he's a veteran guy that, you know, I don't think I want to see him, you know, carrying the ball 30 times a game. But, you know, you give it to him, you know, 12, 15 times, keep Carson and those guys fresh in the fourth quarter. This could be a fun team to watch in that final 5-6 minutes.
Paul Moyer is our guest, as he is every week here with Bob, Dave, and more. Paul, we got into a conversation. It became more of a hypothetical because it was surrounded Antonio Brown, and I think the likelihood of him playing next year or maybe ever are slim to none. He's got a lot of off-field issues that still need to be investigated, cleared up, all that. But having said that, we sort of talked about the idea. Apparently, Russell would love him here. He's been working out with Geno Smith. So the idea of him coming to Seattle became a conversation, and I'm of the opinion I want nothing to do with the guy. Absolutely nothing, because even if you take those off the field things he's been accused of, which are absolutely reprehensible, what you've seen in the way he treated Mike Mayock, just the giant pain he was with the Raiders with the helmet and I'm not practicing and the feet, and he's just been a giant pain and a disruptor. Is there any part of you that would want him here? I mean, it feels like a bad, bad idea.
Well, yeah, you know, I think, God, it's such a loaded question. But, look, I think the morality part is a tough one because, to me, morality and, you know, picking people, you know, went out from with politicians 30 years ago, and it's led up to today. And there's been so many guys, it's often not the crime, it's did it get seen on TV. I look at Ray Rice, you know, as an example, never got another opportunity, still married to his wife. And I think in today's world, the whole Me Too, it's certainly, you know, you're a lot more scrutiny. So let me just take that side away, because I don't think that alone gives him an opportunity, you know, particularly here. I just think with the organization. But the part where how he dealt with, I thought the Oakland Raiders, and I thought they were more than fair. And I thought, you know, particularly Gruden and how he tried to handle it. And they tried to treat him very professional, were very lenient towards him. And to me, they didn't do anything but try to support him. That scares me. But if you control the money, you can control a player. And what I mean by that, there's no guaranteed money. if there's there's nothing there that, you know, you lose in draft picks, there's nothing there. You know, the Seahawks are a team that feels like they can probably bring a guy like him around. He scares me because I think there's more to it than just what we saw. I think there's some mental issues, and I don't know how you deal with that. I'm also, this is where I'm, you know, probably going to get hit on Twitter, I'm also a believer in second chances. There's just so much behind the scenes on that. They'd have to really do their homework and research. It is beyond hypothetical, though. I mean, we're certainly talking about, Russell said, hey, I'd love him. He's got to get past the NFL. He would have to get past a complete, you know, them researching everything there. And I just think this franchise at the end of the day would probably pass on that. But, you know, my God, you all know he's a phenomenal player. He would probably help the team if they could control the outburst. So how's that for me definitely not answering it?
Well, and, you know, Paul, I portrayed Chuck this way, and you were around Chuck Knox a lot more than I was, but I felt like he always kind of had like a father complex, like, hey, I can bring this guy in and we can whip him into shape and get him walking the straight line. When you were a coach, was there a lot of that going on, and does it still go on? I feel like, you know, coaches are hopeful, right? They try to see the best
Absolutely.
In a guy. And yeah, and so for, you know, a guy like this, I just wonder if he's too far past the line. But do you remember times where you guys would kind of rationalize things away and say, yeah, but man, he's such a good football player? Because that's what you think when you look at Antonio Brown.
Yeah, we didn't have anything to Antonio Brown's level. I mean, Antonio Brown, to me, really, I think he has, you know, mental issues. That if that part's not taken care of, I don't know how you move forward with him. You know, probably the one guy, Dave, and I think I've heard you talk about, is Fred Young. You know, we all thought we could coach Fred. And Fred, I remember Chuck saying, he goes, look, you coach him up, you let him do his thing until the point where he doesn't make enough plays to warrant the headache that he delivers to this team. And if you can control the money, you can often control a player. And it's kind of what I said before. If there's no guaranteed money, if there's no draft picks tied to a guy, look, I'm just letting you go. And, you know, they come, you know, they're a little more, you can treat them a little bit more father figure there, you know, and have a little more control with these guys. Again, I think Antonio Brown is in a whole nother realm. We had Percy Harvin. We saw how that worked out. That did not work out well. And he isn't even in the remote realm of Antonio Brown. But I think every coach, every father thinks they can turn a player around, they can turn their children around. And, you know, that's just, sometimes it's, you know, we're not very successful with it, but there's always that hope.
All right, Paul, here's an offbeat question for you. I was just thinking about it. Even though the Seahawks were 4-4 at CenturyLink last year, that's not typical of their home record. They're known for having one of the best home field advantages in the NFL. So I'm just wondering, Paul, if they don't have any fans to all the games this year, do you think they're going to suffer the most?
It's funny. I was on an Arizona show today and talked a little bit about that because – you know, Arizona, I think, has improved, and if there's no fans, to me, they don't have a home field advantage. Matter of fact, anything, most of the time, we have more fans there than they have. You know, maybe that's an advantage to Arizona. I think, you know, from a Las Vegas point of view, which you will appreciate, Jim, you know a home field advantage is worth around 3 points. I think those will be cut. You know, maybe it's, you know, 1 point, you know, just being in your home environment at the very least. So I think so. But I also, look, I know how good we are on the road. And the Seahawks will practice. They'll find a way to simulate what that is like. You know, I mean, Pete's already thinking about that. I'm pretty sure of it. So, yeah, I think it costs us a point or two because it is such a loud crowd. But hopefully we don't have to worry about that. Maybe with just a few games.
Hey, Paul, quickly before we let you go, I don't know if I've ever asked you about Baker Mayfield, but we played a cut of him earlier saying, just to paraphrase, he's going to do less talking and let it happen on the field, which if you're a Browns fan, you got to love because he's done a lot of chirping and they had a really down year, 6-10 last year, 21 interceptions he threw. Where are you at with Baker Mayfield? Are you a believer in him? Do you root for him or are you on the other side?
Well, when he came out of college, I believed in him, and I liked his demeanor, and I liked, you know, I thought he could back up that, you know, confidence that he had, and you know, to me, it wasn't a false confidence. I thought he truly believed he was one of the great players. I thought he was coming out of college. I think it's still undetermined on him, but you have to shut your mouth at some point if you can't back it up, and he hasn't been able to back it up since he's hit the NFL. But until he gets an offensive line, because that offensive line was horrible. He had no time to throw. He made horrible decisions under pressure. You know, I think for him, that's perfect. Just shut up. Go prove it. You know, wins and losses will dictate, and then you can plant the, you know, Oklahoma flag on somewhere else if you start winning. But I think he's still a good player, but he's going to have to turn this thing around. They're going to start winning, or I think they're going to lose confidence in him.
Paul, we always appreciate it. We enjoy the conversation. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Paul.
Good stuff from Paul Moyer. You guys look forward to it every week. We look forward to it. So everybody wins. Hey, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even their careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic. 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or a local athlete who's been impacted by the crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. 710 Hometown Heroes. Use it on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. If the Seahawks are done adding to the defensive line, are you all right with that? Where do you stand with the offseason moves? Have they actually improved themselves? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, Dave Wyman. You heard me. Dave Wyman is going to provide some statistical evidence that supports the cooking people. Can you believe that? We're going to get into that. Coming up in less than 15 minutes. Jim, buckle up. It may be uncomfortable. It may be uncomfortable, Jim. I'm just trying to prep you, buddy. So that's coming up in less
than... I'll say this really, really quick. It refutes some of what people are saying.
Okay.
But
all right. Well,
I
we'll
think
give
the
them that.
People will, yeah. They'll be
we'll give them that. That's coming up in less than 15 minutes. You don't want to miss it. Hey, you guys can weigh in on this topic right now. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Bob Condotta wrote a piece a little while ago. I think he wrote this before Carlos Hyde was signed. Is that right, Jim? This came out before that signing?
Yeah, I think it might have been or right around that time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I'm just trying to
how's
determine.
That for an answer? And
that's great, very definitive. But he wrote a story basically looking at the Seahawks roster as it sits right now, and he took each position group. He took defensive line, offensive line, linebackers, secondary, all of them, and wrote a little blurb about whether they truly are better than they were last year, or same, or worse. And one that stood out was the defensive line, and His thoughts on the D-line are this. He says, this feels like the most unfinished part of the team, as it would be a surprise if the Seahawks don't make another addition or two, possibly even reeling in Clowney, including a veteran tackle. But as of today, the likely starting defensive line would be Rasheem Green in either Benson Mayoa or Daryl Taylor at ends, if you consider Bruce Irvin a linebacker, as he's listed, and Jaron Reed and Puna Ford at the tackle spots. Is that better than last year's line of Clowney and Quentin Jefferson at the ends and Reed and Ford in the middle? That's obviously putting a lot of faith that a rookie can develop quickly and that Mayoa and Irvin can replicate the big seasons they had last year. Until the next move comes, it's hard to say this group isn't worse for now. Dave, where are you at with that?
Well, I don't think it could possibly be either. It can't be better or worse because they just kind of... I guess that it depends on what you think of Bruce Irvin. But look, I feel like we go through this every year and we forget about it. But just to give a couple of good examples, like it was painful going from Matt Hasselbeck to Russell Wilson. It was painful going from Lofa to Tupu to Bobby Wagner. We just didn't know, you know, and that's where they are right now. And I think Jim, you might remember this last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, where I was like, I had this, you know, like battle cry, trust in Pete. And, you know, and the reason why I would say that is because I think Schneider and his staff, they've kind of done their work. I know they're all involved in everything, but now it's time for Pete to coach these guys up that John went out and got. And, you know, it's just a painful part of the NFL. So it's really more than anything, it's just a wait and see. I mean, look, you have a first round draft choice that they, and I know that they haven't been great, but like Clayton keeps saying, you know, Ifedi, I mean, he started, there was lots of complaints. He did get lots of penalties, but he was a starter and he played for, didn't miss a game in 4 years. So, you know, if you get the equivalent of that from L.J. Collier, you know, and same thing with Rasheem Green. You go back like the last three drafts, these guys have to produce. They have to. And but that I think that's nothing new. It's not like the Seahawks are going in blind to the season. I just think I feel like we've done that a lot of years and we've seen players to develop, you know. So, yeah, I don't think that you can say it's necessarily better. I would never make that argument, but you know, you don't really know that it's that much worse. It, you know, is it worse because you didn't go get the guys that everybody thought you should? And that really starts and ends with Clowney, right? I mean, that, I think everybody, if we would be, and let's say Clowney goes out and has the same type of year that he did last year with three sacks. I mean, even if that were the case, I think people would think, okay, well, we're better with Clowney because he's such a good player. So it's just something that you kind of have to put faith in. But, you know, the other thing is they're not alone on this. Every team is waiting for their young guys that they drafted to develop. And the Seahawks have found a way to do that. And we went through that with that whole draft extravaganza thing that, you know, you get three or four guys. I mean, Trey Flowers has to improve, you know. L.J. Collier certainly has to. Rasheem Green has to get better. I mean, in order to get better on their defense, they're going to have to rely on the guys that they've drafted. And again, I don't think that that's anything new around the NFL, and it's not anything new here in Seattle.
Well, to answer the question anyway, I'll just go with Condotta and say it's worse right now. And I thought Tom Wassel made a good point. I think it was yesterday when I was listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy. And we know that Jadeveon Clowney was double-teamed a lot. So everybody who supports Clowney, he was double-teamed a lot, and so that's why he didn't get to the quarterback or didn't have those flashy numbers that everybody's looking for. Well, okay, fine. But Tom was saying, if Clowney was double-teamed that much, how come the other guys didn't do better? You know, and that's a good point. So Rasheem Green, all these other guys, if one guy on your line is getting all the attention, then why didn't you come up with more than four sacks? Or why didn't someone else come up with more than, you know, 28 sacks collectively? And the defensive line, 19 and a half sacks, because there were linebackers and cornerbacks getting some sacks from blitzing, too. So, yeah, I don't know. I just look at it and just on paper anyway, and you guys, I think, feel this way, that it's an aberration last year and that just, you know, whoever you're trotting out this year is probably going to get more than 28 sacks. Well, I hope you're right about that, and I think you are. But boy, the guys that they have right now, I keep hoping that they're going to bring in one of these veteran guys like Clay Matthews, Everson Griffin, or Michael Bennett. And I think they can really get them on the cheap. You got a 1,000-yard rusher for $3 million. You might be able to get Everson Griffin for $3 or $4 million at this point. Who knows? I mean, it's getting late in free agency, so. And the other part of it, I like bringing in a veteran. And we know they'll probably get a defensive tackle because they do that. They have a history of finding really good guys that are, you know, plug the middle and do the things that you're looking for them to do. But I'm hoping they'll bring in a defensive end that can not only give you the tangible results on the field, but maybe serve as a mentor to the young guys you got in the draft, Taylor and Robinson.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that, Jim, that I hope they're not done. I really hope they're not done, because if we're – even if they stand pat and say, we're done, we feel good about this group, I think they will be better. I think were right. I think they would. I just don't think they're going to have everything fall the way it did last year and end up with 28 sacks. I think they're going to end up with more, but that won't necessarily mean they're a better, more productive defense. I think it's just last year was such a weird anomaly that they're going to be better this year, whether it's 29 sacks or 39 sacks. We'll find out. But I do not want them to be done. I need to see that guy that, as Dave calls him, the extra meeting guy. I want to see that because, in my opinion, as they sit right now, they don't have that guy.
Well, I think John Schneider would say, okay, well, I'll just go pick one off the extra meeting guy tree, and there's not really anybody out there, right? So, yeah, I think that there's, you know, it was a weird year defensively. It was really hard to explain, you know, what was going on. And, you know, like I said earlier, I had Nishant Kondapudi, our awesome intern who goes to Ohio State.
Well, you nailed that name. You just throw that out there easily.
That's my guy, man. He's like a little brother to me. I got him on the side. Or no, I didn't do it. Jessamyn did. Jessamyn got him sideline passes at the Cleveland game. And so he drove down and was down there on the sidelines with one of his buddies. He was just, and I introduced him to Schneider, and he was so excited. But I'm gonna task him with something that we're gonna talk about in the next segment. But you know, I had him look up, you know, running game and turnover ratio. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because the Seahawks were third in the NFL last year in takeaways. So they were really good at that. They were also good at limiting big plays. They were like in the top 10. You know, that's kind of all they did, right? I mean, they didn't get sacks. They didn't, you know, limit yardage. It was just a strange year defensively. And I don't know how they were playing it or what their, you know, philosophy was going in, but they were not aggressive. And for that reason, that's why they didn't get a lot of sacks. And then they didn't, you know, as far as the coverage goes, there wasn't time for linemen to get home. So it was just very strange. But you know, I just think it's one of those things that you have to just put your trust and your faith in. And I'm not sure if we pay attention to that every year. And, you know, usually it's not so glaring. And I think it's also exaggerated here because it was the defense. I mean, come on, man. This is a defensive team. They were top four. I mean, they were number one scoring for 4 years in a row. Nobody's ever done that in NFL history. And then we got what we got last year, which was just a weird thing of playing soft type of defense. They didn't have a good nickel guy, so they played a lot of three linebacker sets. It was just, it was strange. But again, I just go back to, well, they won 12 games somehow. Somehow they were able to outscore their opponents, and it was very hard to explain. But I'm more on the side that I'm going to just trust that those guys are going to develop, because I don't think there is that guy out there. Really, the only guy, the extra meeting guy out there, is Clowney. And, you know, maybe they find a way to get him, but it might be at the expense of K.J. Wright. Would you guys be okay with K.J. Wright and, say, Jacob Hollister getting cut so that they could bring in Clowney? I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, that's one you'd have to mull over for a bit. And it's, again, not a topic that's going away anytime soon. But as I told everybody out there, Dave Wyman, of all people, has come up with some numbers that support the cooking people. And Jim is on the edge of his seat. I know all of you are. We'll unveil what we're talking about next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, if you've got a smart speaker at home, whether it's Google, Alexa, whatever it is, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and bam, you got a radio right there in your home, and you can hang with us all day. If you don't have the app, which you can download for free, just the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group, you can download that, listen to the show, and take us out into the sunshine with you. But as I said before the break, Dave Wyman, of all people, came up with some numbers that support, as Jim calls them, the cooking people out there. Jim, I want you to hang on here, because this could be rough for you. Okay. As you said, the cooking people could all go jump in a lake. I know how you feel about them, but Dave, what did you come up with as it pertains to Russell throwing the ball?
Well, it was more about, like, how they start. right? So, and you know, I was kind of having an interaction with somebody because they said, look, it was obvious that they were way more conservative in the first half than they were the second half. And I was like, really? How so? What are the examples that you could tell me? And so, you know, what I just, and this is a pretty basic stat, right? I mean, it doesn't have to do with, it's about how many times Russ passed the ball in the first half versus the second half, or I should say the Seahawk offense threw the ball. It's not just about Russ, but, you know, and I guess in one way it supports the cooking people, but in another way it sort of refutes what they've been saying. And if you think, I think we all understand pretty much, and other than like trick plays, I mean, just in a basic sense, you know, and I don't know how, you know, there's a lot of offensive coordinators out there, right, that are like, well, they need to do more multi-personnel and, you know, motion beforehand and, you know, this modern stuff. And, you know, it's so funny. I watched, like, the Ravens are just we are going to outman you and just smash you in the mouth. I mean, one of the touchdowns that they had that they ran against the Seahawks last year, it was like they had an overload with a tight end and a tight end in the backfield, and then they brought a tight end across in motion. And they all basically were blocking in like a 10-foot space. I mean, there was like 2,500 pounds of beef there right at the point of attack. So, I mean, is that some modern, you know, scheme thing? No. It's not. So, I mean, I guess I don't get what people want, but, you know, and I was asking, well, and so the most basic thing would be, okay, are they throwing the ball more in the first half than the second half? And this year, and I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear this, there were 9 of the 16 games Russell passed the ball more in the first half than in the second half. Start with Cincinnati, 13 times in the first half, 7 in the second, and that was a tight game. Pittsburgh, 19 times they threw it. And again, I talked to Professor about this. You know, he brought up the Pittsburgh game. I think Russ was sacked like 3 or 4 times. And our guy, Fluke, you know, DJ Fluker struggled in that game. Yeah, he had a couple of times where he had a hard time picking up stunts and things like that. Arizona, they threw it 16 times in the first half, 12 in the second. The Rams, 13 versus 10. So, yeah, 9 times that they threw the ball more in the first half than in the second half. And then you go in the playoffs, they threw the ball 21 times against Philadelphia in the first half and then 9 in the second half. And that was a one-score game. You know, it was, what, 17-9. That was the score there both times that they played in Philadelphia. And then, you know, the one where they you know, they threw 13 times against Green Bay in the first half and 18 in the second. And there's a lot of those, like Minnesota, they won that game. They threw it 15 times in the first half, 16 in the second. You know, the Rams, they threw it 17 times. This is a loss. 17 times in, this is the second one they played the Rams, 17 times in the first half, 19 times in the second half. So there were some that were pretty close. But in 10 of the total 18 games they played, they threw the ball more in the first half. So that's something that kind of refutes the cooking people. But
the record
in the regular
was
season, they were 8-1 in the first when they threw the ball more in the first half. And look, I don't think that's some magic fairy dust that you just sprinkle on. Well, you throw the ball more in the first half. I mean, there's so much more that goes into it. And, you know, again, I'll go back to the preparation during the week and what these guys are doing. First of all, they're experts. That's why they're there. Because, you know, and I get all the time, well, they need to do this, and they need to do that, and they need to do this. And I'm like, you know what you need to do? You need to get a job as an offensive coordinator in the NFL because you're obviously such a brilliant play caller that, you know, and it's hard to get those jobs, man. Those guys put in tons and tons of work. And I know there's a lot of skepticism about the coaches and everything. The vast, vast majority of coaches that they get in the NFL because they're just total grinders. Steve, I did a thing last year on Football 101 with Steve Spagnuolo, who's the D coordinator for the Chiefs, and he did some brilliant things that were very simple but gutsy. in the second half. That dude has been all over the globe coaching football, starting off in very, like, at a very young age at crappy schools. He went to NFL Europe for a while. I mean, that guy has earned his stripes, and he called a really good game against the 49ers, and that helped the Chiefs win that Super Bowl. But these coaches, you know, they're putting a lot of time into this stuff, and they're looking at their opponent. So it's not just some arbitrary thing. So when people say, well, you need to throw it more in the first half, every play is like a different situation down in distance. You know, what your plays you have, the defense they're running, there's all these things that go into it. But I thought at first it was interesting to me because I'm going, well, all the people that say they're being very conservative in the first half, if you want to measure it by number of attempts, you're wrong, okay, for mostly. Right. I mean, there's some that are really exaggerated, but like I said, there's a couple in there that are close to making it, you know, like 11 or 10 or 11 of the games where they threw more in the first half. But, you know, they threw it more in the first half in 9 games. Now, there's all these things that go into a win, the flow of the game, things like that. But they were 8-1 in those games where they threw it in the first half. So threw it more in the first half. So, and then they were 1-1 in the playoffs. They threw it 21 times in Philly, 9 in the second half, and for a total of 30, and they won that game. So it doesn't really answer anything, but I think more than anything to me, this kind of refutes the fact, because they've won based on their run game and their defense. Since Pete Carroll's been here, that's what it's been about. But they haven't, it's not like they've just sat back and handed the ball off time and time again. They've thrown the ball a fair amount in the first half. And I'm going to get the numbers since Russell has been here or since Pete's been here. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see that it was pretty similar to the way things went this year.
Well, Dave, this is disappointing news, though, because I think you've supported the cooking people more than you've hurt them. We just go back to the win-loss record, and if they're 8-1 throwing the ball more in the first half than they are in the second, that kind of
in 3-4 in the games where he threw less earlier in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, whose idea was it to have this segment anyway?
It's mine. You know, that's why I screwed up the Kyle Allen thing where I said, oh, I see he's got a Redskin logo, but oh, I forgot they traded him, because I was going through furiously trying to do these numbers so I could get the cooking people, you know, the spotlight. I don't see anybody texting in claiming to be a cooking person, but, you know, they have thrown the ball more in the first half than I think everybody thinks, so... So it's kind of a 50-50 deal. Yeah, they've won more, but, you know, still, I think everybody thinks that, you know, for whatever reason, Pete and John just sit back and wait. Or I'm sorry, not Pete and John, but Pete and Schottenheimer sit back and kind of wait around. But they've been fairly aggressive in the first half.
All right, good stuff. So yeah, I think you'll be able to get over it, Jim. Jim's very disappointed with all of that.
That's okay,
Dave.
We're
going to come back. We'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
There was so much learning happening today. I'm not sure how much we can squeeze into this segment, but we're going to do our best. So, Brian, what did we learn?
Well, first of all, we learned about Jim's review of the 4th-and-15 rule being tabled.
Now it's not even part of the conversation, as that's been tabled.
Hey, as far as that 4th-and-15 being tabled, can I give you a Dave Wyman impression? And that's this. Hey, come on. Come on.
How do you really feel about the 4th and 15 immature being tabled, Jim?
I just wanted to do that one time. I didn't really want to copy you because that's your deal, Dave. I'm disappointed that they didn't have it go to a vote and, you know, find out how close the vote was if it didn't pass or if it passed, and thinking about what it was going to mean and all these different things. Yeah, it was disappointing today.
I'm with you. I liked it. I was much more accepting of it when I knew it was an option and not going to be the only option, that you could still go onside kick. So I was like, all right, cool. Maybe we'll get a chance to see some coaches do it. Others will elect to go with the onside kick. But it didn't even get that far. And it feels like they make these things so hard. Like, oh, we don't have the people for the you know, the sky judge. We can't find, you know, 7 or 8 or 10 or how many people they need that are qualified. How tough is that? How tough is it to find somebody that can do that with the time they have on their hands? Yet it just feels like they make everything just so hard when it doesn't seem to be that. Maybe there's something I'm missing. Maybe it's decidedly more difficult than I'm giving credit for, but it sure doesn't seem like it on the surface.
I think what it is that it's already a good product. You don't have to make all these changes. It's not so bad that we need to go and all of a sudden throw this circus 4th and 15 thing in there. And I thought Moyer said it best that, like, you know, why are you going to reward a team that has been crappy the entire, and, you know, I know everybody's going to bring up the
NFC, they're losing for a reason.
I think when it comes to the rules, there's a lot of traditionalists, and maybe people would see that as, oh, they're stodgy, but it's worked. Leave it alone. Just leave the game alone. Don't all of a sudden throw some weird gimmick in there.
What else did we learn, Brian?
Well, we learned that Dave thought there was one pretty major issue with Baker Mayfield's vow to talk less.
Yeah, well, and this one's for you, Jim. If I was Baker Mayfield, I would have said, I'm going to talk less this year. The end. That was a lot of talking for somebody who's not going to talk.
He's going to shut up every time.
Right after that.
Yeah, it's just weird to me that when somebody, you know, talks at length about how much they're not going to talk anymore, and he should take like a vow of silence, maybe.
Like Kramer.
That would be good for a couple years. Yeah, that's right.
I always get a kick out of it when there are quarterbacks you don't like. Like when you trash on Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield, I love that stuff. Keep it up.
Yeah, I think Baker's going to make
it easy.
Okay,
we'll
though. Do. I think Baker will make it easy, and I just don't think it'll be that hard for Dave or myself to trash on Baker Mayfield because I don't like him either. What else did we learn, Brian?
Well, finally, we learned that, like normal, Jim has no shortage of thoughts on the cooking people.
It's almost like seam heads in baseball where you feel like you need to get up to speed. You know, the seam heads in baseball, it's like, man, I can't believe you still value RBIs and you still value some of those old school stats. It's almost like, you know, running the football. Why would you value that when we could show you how it's so much different? But yeah, the cooking people can just take a flying leap in Lake Washington if they want, because I'm a disciple of Dave Wyman's stats right here.
Are you still a disciple of his stats now that he laid out the most recent numbers for you?
Some of them. I'm being more selective now, though.
Well, yeah, those last stats were a little damaging.
Yeah, I wasn't going in trying to like support my argument. I'm just like, well, I don't know why people are saying that they're conservative in the first half. I feel like it's something that always gets said afterwards. Well, they lost. Why? Well, because they're too conservative. Well, there's lots of times where they win, where they're conservative in the first half, and everybody just goes with this knee-jerk reaction. So I'm like, all right, let's just have a look, and that's like the most basic thing. I mean, anything other than that would be pretty futile as far as analyzing, you know, well, they didn't use enough motion. I mean, you'd get into all kinds of crap that would be, you know, all these people's opinion of what is more progressive or whatever, and they think that their offense needs to come out of the Stone Age and Russell's being actively subverted. And I thought maybe the most damning part of it wasn't necessarily the record, them being 8-1 when he threw more in the first half. I thought it was more that 9 times in the regular season they threw more in the first half. So what are you talking about? So I don't know. I guess I didn't see it as, you know, this big boost for the cooking people. I thought it was more like, you guys are not paying attention, and you only pay attention to the things that, that you want to. But you know what? I don't want to make fans think like they can't have those opinions, because that's what makes it great, right? That's why we have jobs, because everybody, you know, thinks differently and has all of these you know, ideas that they want to put out there, and that's what makes our show go, right?
But that's, as we've learned, Dave, if you echo their opinion, you're super smart. But if you come up with a contrary opinion, you don't know anything about sports. That's how it works.
Yeah. Well, that's the business we're in, boys.
Well, yeah, but Dave, I've also heard you say in the past that not everyone deserves to have an opinion.
Yeah, that... No, what I said is... What I said is not everybody's entitled to an opinion, because there's some
entitled
out there too. So
okay,
yeah. So, but yeah, but yeah. It's funny when people. It's funny when they pop off and they say, "Well, you don't know what you're looking at." I'm like, "All right, well, yeah, I think I do, but yeah. Apparently, you're a genius and you should get a job as a coach in the NFL."
Yeah, yeah. It's always fun to interact with those people. They make it all fun, and they're always free to text in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. That does it for us. Want to thank our guests today, John Clayton, John Morosi, and Paul Moyer, all for joining us on the program. Really good stuff today. So if you missed any of that, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then just scroll down to our picture and click on that. It's all right there waiting for you each and every day. We're back tomorrow with you right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.